Hey guys, so on today's episode, we talk about obviously the carnivore diet, Austrian economics, Bitcoin, and a little bit about Noster in the very end. I find it very interesting that Monica was basically eating meat her whole life, although in her early years as a child, she was eating a lot of fruit juice with added sugar on top. So that most likely contributed to her oral problems, which resolved once she took that out of the equation. And also, very importantly, she talks about how she got to know her local rancher when she was living back in New York and how she learned how to cut meat. So these are some pretty cool things that I think everyone should try out and get to know their rancher, learn how to cut meat. Very important skills to know. So I hope you like the episode. If you like it, please leave a comment, a like, or send me some sats. Anyways, let's begin. Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Fernando Morales, and this is the first podcast on the Dr. Fernando Morales podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, Monica Bravo. She is a multidisciplinary artist and a polymath. So, Monica, first of all, can you explain to us what this means? And tell us a bit about yourself too, please.
Oh, first of all, thank you so much for having me here, and I'm very excited to be the first one. Had I known. So I wish you all the best. And so, okay, so I'm a multidisciplinary artist. I am originally from Colombia and I live in Miami Beach. I lived in New York for 27 years, and it's been 4 years that I've been here in Miami. I've been doing artwork for 30 years, and it is multidisciplinary because I not only just have one medium. So I started doing animations. I'm also a photographer. But what I do right now is I create a lot of artwork for public art spaces. There's a program here in the United States called 1% for Art. So every time there's a building that is owned by the government, like airport, hospital, I don't know, universities, that is built or renovated, there's an agency that hires artists to commission artwork to be produced and display permanently. So I do a lot of that work. I have a lot of work in prominent places like the New York subway. I have two pieces there, and I have all over. I can tell you later where, but I do have. So it's a process of a very long process, sometimes years, where I have to create a investigation and do research about what the community needs, and then I go and take some time to elaborate something, and I usually have to present this in front of a jury that is composed by many people from the community. So it's a very competitive way of working, very different from what I was working in New York with galleries. There's a very different system that I kind of left that market. I ran away from, and I can tell you why, but right now, so I do that. And I also call myself a polymath because in Greek, the word poly means many, and mathematikos means the learner, that person that likes to learn. So I've always been a very avid reader and very curious mind that I investigate whatever is across in my mind. So I know a little bit about many things. And once I get into the rabbit holes, I go all the way in. So sometimes I am surprised with the amount of curiosity and the time that I spend, not just researching, but actually investigating and educating myself.
Okay, actually, I think we can take this on in multiple directions, actually. Well, the focus of this podcast is mainly towards the carnivore diet, but I see some interesting things here that can intertwine. We talk about Bitcoin, Noster as well. I'll ask you later on about Noster if you know what that is. But quickly, if you tell us why you ran away from New York, right? Am I correct? And where are you
Yeah,
now?
I
You
escaped.
escaped. All right, tell us a bit about that.
Okay, so I say this as a joke, but it was true the last few years. Let's say that after the 2010s or something like that, I did see New York changing dramatically, very drastically, very rapidly, and deteriorating. Like life in New York was becoming all about celebrities. It was becoming very shallow, and I just didn't resonate anymore with like living there. And the art world had changed a lot, and so everybody was more focused on the networking. Probably was like that all the time, but I didn't feel like that when I was there in the 90s, and then in the 2000s. It was mostly 2010s onwards when I start seeing the decay of the city, and really understanding very well when they say, if you don't you know, if you want to make it, you can fake it, or fake it till you make it. That was what people were saying. And I was very impressed because it's like, oh, so I can fake it until I make it. And then I started understanding exactly what it meant. It meant like people were not being authentic. People were being very much pretenders and creating personas to kind of fit the situation. But deep inside, when you do that, when you sell your soul to the devil or to the market or whatever, to the fiat world, you become depleted inside. And so I knew I had choices many times about that, but I have a very strong personality. So every time I saw that I was led to go that way, I would always go no. And then I would get this response from the people who were working with me or for me that I was very complicated. So I started noticing that I was the complicated one. I was like, just me stating my truth makes me complicated. That's weird. So I decided I didn't know where to go because I mean, it sounds very funny, but after a few years, you don't think that there's any other place other than New York. But I did start it feeling around 2015, 16, I decided to leave the market. I left the galleries. I was working with many galleries and I said, I am sure that I can do this by my own. I had already started doing public art and I saw that the rhythm was very different. I had to apply for jobs. So I had to put myself in the market. I had to learn how to like deal with the projects directly and be worried about the project and not about who I know and what party I have to go. So it just showed me a different way of communicating myself with my values and what I was good at, as opposed to me playing games that have nothing to do with what I can do. So it was pretty much like looking myself in the mirror and saying, you're phony, you know, get real. So I did that. It was perfect to do it during the pandemic. I saw myself, I kind of knew where we were heading. I have many friends in Italy and in China. So for the beginning of 2020, I would speak to them. They were already like, you know, telling me stories. And so when I said, oh, it's just a matter of time that's going to get to New York. And so I had few things that I knew that I had to do. Like I was one of the first persons that used, like, because we don't know what it was, right? So I used gloves and mask. People didn't want to see. I had no idea. And then I started hearing the news, came to America, and then I started going like, wait, something here doesn't go. Because I also have a very healthy style of living. So at the time I used to drink still. So that was the first choice. It's like, I'm going to stop drinking. And then I had a dream 3 months into the pandemic. And the dream said, you should leave New York. And I said, where? Where should I go? It says Miami. And I'm like, but I don't want to drive. I says, have you thought about Miami Beach? And so I found an apartment in Miami Beach. And within 3 weeks, I was here.
Wow. Wow. That's dramatic. So you're capable of criticizing yourself, of adapting, of learning. And you mentioned health. So like actually I want to use that as a segue to the carnivore diet. So I know you're a carnivore. Yep. Mm-hmm. Could you talk to us a bit about that? Like when did it start, how it started, and basically your journey with it up until now?
Yeah, well, I'm going to like right now I'm 100% and I've been on the 100% probably 7 months. Before that, I was like 89%, let's say. And the 11% was lettuce. I just love lettuce. That was the only green that I could like because it was crunchy. But really, really, like when I was born in Colombia and we have a lot of red meat. And I remember just asking for red meat for breakfast. And my mom sometimes will give me like eggs, which I like, boiled eggs. That's what she used to do. But I would go like, can I have a steak? And so they thought that I had anemia or something because I was always craving for the meat. And there's a story I have that is really funny, is that my mom used to go to the butcher. She will buy. She had a school, so she sometimes in the school people will eat there. So she would say, let's go to the big market and try to get the best prices. My mom was really rough buying stuff. She was always negotiating. So I remember going to the market with her, very tiny, and wearing always like something where I would have pockets. And I said, Mom, can I go with you? And she goes, yes. And I was, seven. I would go with her. And then we'll go, are we going to the butcher? Yeah. So I will get at the back and I will steal the meat. I will steal it. Raw meat. And I will start munching it. And then sometimes a lot. And then my mom is like asking the butcher, like, oh, come on, give me a break. And he was always laughing, saying, you know, you always bring this little one and she's stealing from me and you want a break. What are we going to do? My mom was like, you embarrass me. And I was like, oh, but the meat is so good. So my mom started cooking for us. She was a very practical woman. So she started cooking in the kitchen, and she would not set up the table. She will make a huge steak, and then she will, you know, take the wooden thing, she will cut it in pieces, and we were four kids. She was just feeding one after the other. And I used to cheat because my brother and my sister, they were more like slow. So I would push them and say, okay, another one. So I remember just meat for me had always been this like thing that I loved. So much of people used to call me carnitas, like that was my nickname. And people will invite me to have a dinner or something. And they will say, oh, yeah, you're still only eating meat? Because I will say, no chicken, no fish, like just meat, just meat. So I always been a carnivore at heart. Only that, obviously, when you grow up, they tell you that the veggies are very important. And in countries like Colombia, you eat a lot of rice and potatoes. So there's a culture, and plátanos, plantains. So there's a culture of having this very, very heavy carbohydrates next to the meat. You always have meat, there's always a protein, but because we come from the mountain, I don't know, like the roots were always served. And I always remember having the dish and always pushing aside everything and just actually, you know, trading with whoever, like, I'll give you my potatoes, would you give me your piece of meat? And so it was very, so I was born a carnivore.
Interesting, like the first time I hear it, actually, like a child preferring meat. Like, would they ever give you candies or anything sweet?
No, my mom had like very good policy. She never, like, I never had a Coca-Cola in my life. Like, we would have fruits. She was very big on, like, because Colombia has beautiful fruits, so she was very big on fruits. But then I would tell her, and I don't know if I have like past lives where I was like, I don't know, like a wise person, but I would say to my mom, Mom, why are you making me this juice and put sugar in it? There's already sugar in the juice. And she was saying, because I saw that it was fermenting very fast, and almost like 1 hour later, it's almost like alcohol taste. And I was like, Mom, I don't like this juice. But it was very natural, where I would say, don't put all that condiments. Like, she used to like cumin. I hate it, comino. Like, I hate it. And I was like, Mom, why are you putting that on the chicken? Because she did not really how to cook. She was like, but it's nice. And I said, no, it is not. So I will be very attentive with food. So I actually started cooking very early. I was probably 8 or 9 when I started cooking and making steaks. And then around 10 years old, it's like, Mom, can I be the one who goes to buy the food? So she gave me, credit card, whatever, a driver, and the responsibility of getting food. So then I would buy steaks, like T-bone steaks. That was what I used to buy.
Wow. And what percentage of your life, could you say you were basically on a low carb diet, basically high meat diet, high fat?
I think that pretty much, I don't know, I would say 85, 86%. Only there's a moment in my late 30s, beginning of my 40s, I start doing a lot of meditation. I'm in New York. My husband at the time was not eating his Spanish, so he didn't grow up with a lot of meat. He will have lamb or pork, but I can have pork, and I actually think that pork is delicious. I love lamb, but it's not the same. And chicken is like, oh, I mean, honestly, it's chicken wings, but it's like, and then fish is like, if I have fish, it's because it's like nothing else. Okay, I'll have it, but it's not something that I crave. Like, I'm gonna have, not even the crab here, like. It's like, yeah, it's good, but it's not the same thing as a steak. Yeah, no, it is not. So when I started living with him, and we were as a couple, we were cooking everything, so he started cooking more, and a lot of them, he wouldn't eat red meat. So I started more or less like having more like gazpacho and the stuff that he was cooking at times. And I will miss the meat, but I was like sometimes saying, don't be too complicated, because that was always like, you're so complicated. I was just saying, I don't like this, I like this. So then also started meditating. I started going to this Taoist martial artist teacher, and he never said don't eat meat, but there was a trend about doing that, doing yoga, and people trying to go more vegetarian. So I tried vegetarianism like for, I would say, a week, and I was like, aren't you guys hungry? Because I was starving. I was like, what is this? So I could never make it happen. I kept on eating meat or protein in that sense, but there were a lot more of salads and carbs in my diet because of my marriage. Because he used to do a lot of legumes, which I don't like, but all this, like, I don't know how to call them, like frijoles, all that, lentils, beans and stuff like that. I don't go crazy for those.
Did you notice any changes in your health when you start introducing more plant foods, or not much?
Yeah, definitely. There was always I was going through like a process of, so I was not really healthy either at that time because I was not eating that much. I was a smoker, heavy smoker.
Okay.
So I was smoking cigarettes, smoking pot. Like, I was doing a lot of that stuff, not for my body. But then when I was eating, I was not eating the proper things. So I noticed after being 36, 37, 38 years old, that my body was not responding. And I always been very athletic, but I was like, I think it was smoking the pot and becoming like really concerned about my artwork that I would spend many hours. I did not sleep that much because I would go to my studio and do all-nighters. So I think I in a way, there was a bunch of stuff that didn't help me be healthy because I was not regulating my body at all. Like I was not sleeping, or at the time that I should have, I was smoking a lot. I was ingesting a lot of substances, alcohol. And the food, when I would eat, it wouldn't be like the best kind of the best choice, because also I was never hungry. You know, when you do all that, you're never hungry. So you choose something. And I started feeling sick. I started feeling terribly sick. So I discovered I don't go to doctors. That's another important thing. Since I'm like 11, I started going to acupuncturist. So I don't have health insurance. I don't do doctors. Not at all. I'm not afraid of not having insurance. I have learned with a Taoist teacher and everything. Yeah, I learned traditional Chinese medicine. I can actually self-regulate myself if I need to. I know a lot about herbs. I know a lot about homeopathy. So I have actually studied a lot of these things. And I can tell, like, for instance, right now I know like what to take if I want to, if I have parasites, I know three things to take. Like I know a lot of that stuff, but I, most important, I listen to my body. So when I was in that period that I was not listening to my body and I was like in another place, I discovered that I was having some problems with some my ovaries. And then I discovered that it was due to stress. And so the doctor at the time, I went to this gynecologist, said that I shouldn't eat at all any meat because that will propel bigger things. And that's the time for a few months that I didn't eat any meat. And I thought I was going to die because it made me a lot of cravings towards sugary things that I never had before. Like I was craving ice cream. I was craving, because I was hungry. So I started having legumes and stuff like that. But then it was like something is missing. And so I started having dessert. And then all of a sudden that became like a big thing. And that didn't heal me at all. Actually, I got worse. I got really worse. And that's when I went and I found the Taoist teacher. Most of the Taoist teachers are acupuncturists. They really train martial arts, or they are healers in a way. They know the system from a different way. So I found this person. It was probably 2004, 2005. I had just become 40 years old, and I noticed that I had been very healthy, and then I hit 40, and everything is like, meh, but a lot due to my lifestyle. And then I promised myself that I was not going to be codependent on any meds, anything. And like I could really switch my body. So he said to me that, I mean, because I had done, you know, the scans that they do, and apparently I had like very big stuff, like everything comes in a dreams. I had a dream that I was going down a mountain and my cysts were coming after me. That's why I went to the doctor, because I said, can you do a scan? And the doctor's like, her response was this, and this is a holistic doctor. Maybe we should have surgery. And I said, surgery? She goes, are you going to have children? I'm like, what? No, apparently I have cysts, right? Is there any way that we can like mitigate or change of something? Like maybe I'm too stressed out. And she says, no, I think it will be easy if you're not going to have kids to take everything out. You know what I did? I stood up and I ran away. Yeah. Like I never came back.
Wise move. Like,
so that's when I kind of found the Dallas teacher. And he said to me, yes, we can do all this. And you have a few years to get back to your rhythm before you hit menopause. But you have to meditate. You have to change your lifestyle. So I started meditating. I started doing Tai Chi. I started really getting to know the rhythm of my body and knowing that I was not going to have those problems. And he said, and you got to eat meat. Like whatever this woman told you is not true. So I went back to, I stopped smoking cigarettes. I stopped everything. I basically, that was a big like call, like, okay, you know, you're not living a healthy lifestyle. And I went in reverse, but I was still eating. Actually, I was not eating stuff, but it was more drinking. Mm-hmm. I was drinking wine and it's not like one glass. Sometimes it's a whole bottle.
A day.
Yeah. Because you know, Spanish husband, you always have lunch. And then you're two, and so you end up with one bottle, and then he can sometimes go like, you know, we start talking, whatever. We had people there was always people around. And so should we open another bottle? So I never knew how much, but we were drinking because he was buying cases. We were drinking. And that kind of sugar destroyed me. And I didn't know. So I was still eating meat. Maybe sometimes a potato, not even potato, maybe a pizza, something like that. But it was more the alcohol.
Yeah.
It was big.
Yeah, alcohol, especially wine. It's just pure sugar. And so like, how did you, okay, so you started, you quit smoking. I'm guessing you also eventually reduced your alcohol intake. Yeah, I guess you started sleeping better. But how did you find out that eating mainly meat was ideal for you?
So I had heard about it, but it took a while. So I quit smoking around that time of the cysts. It was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I went to a hypnotist, finished doing it. Then I was still smoking pot, but I used to meditate and do Tai Chi. And one night, it is another year or so, I'm about to meditate at night, and I asked myself this question. Should I smoke now and meditate later, or should I meditate and smoke? And it was such a stupid question. That I said, okay, I called a friend of mine. He was like me. I said, come over. I had a lot of stuff, like all kinds of things. And I said, here, this is yours. I can't see you for a while. Maybe we will never see each other because we're just friends of, you know, smoking. And so I quit, but I was still drinking wine. And then I got divorced and the husband left, but the wine stayed.
Oof. That makes sense.
So, yeah, that makes, because then I would go out. So socially, and beers. Oh my God, I love beer, cold beer. So I just started realizing that my intake of alcohol was very big. Not that I was an alcoholic, but there was so much sugar. And I started feeling, I was healthy already. Like all my cysts and everything went away because I started going to bed at 9:30 p.m. But the alcohol was always there. I was like, why do I have to drink this? And I was not even drinking so much water in relationship. Now that I am aware of how much water I was dehydrated all the time and too much coffee and stuff like that. So I had started listening. I'm not into diets. I'm not the kind of person that is like, I have a fad about it, but I'm about like trying stuff that I feel that my body needs because I really listen to my body. So I had heard about keto or whatever, and that you know, it was low in carbs. And I had done, I think, is it called Atkins? I had done something like where it was very low carbs, or another diet that it was don't mix. Like if you're going to have a protein, don't have the carbohydrates and don't have fruit at the same time. That was, I think I had that book a long time ago. So I used to be like eating one thing at a time. So I will say, okay, I'm going to have the meat, and then later I will have rice, but I wouldn't have the meat with the rice. And I became really particular about that. And everybody's like, are you okay? And I was like, no, I think I want to have the digestion like that because I had read that book or something like that. But then I think it was more during the pandemic, I started listening. I know Jordan Peterson and his daughter, like they started Michaela, they started talking about it. And when she started talking about, or him, I don't remember which one I heard first, probably him, because they're having problems. And I started listening that they didn't eat anything else. I was like, how do they go to the bathroom?
Yeah, it's a common question.
Yeah, but I was like, wow, only meat. I never thought how boring, how difficult. I was like, yeah. But then I was like, okay, I'm gonna do research and start. But it just didn't happen. But then I started really listening to more people and seeing, you know, Bitcoiners and everything. And I would be too embarrassed to ask people, how do you do number two? Like, that's not the kind of questions that I ask, like, casually. So I started listening to stuff and, you know, Googling, like, if you're in a carnivore, like, and then started understanding about fat. And this is an interesting thing. I always loved fat, but because we were ingrained with the idea that that was really the most unhealthy of all, it was not really protein, it was the fat that needed to get out. I used to eat the fat in my steaks. And people would go like, you're going to have that? And I was like, wow, as a matter of fact, it's the most delicious. But, and now I know why, because it's actually something that the body really enjoys. It's that flavor. It's necessary to digest and everything. So, and I forgot to say, but there's a moment during the whole me recuperating in New York, started to be very popular, the farmer's markets in the 2000s. So I started going to the farmer's market, and I was living very close by, so I would go every day. And so I would buy my food daily. And that reminded me when I was living in Europe that you actually go downstairs and you go to the butcher and you go to buy the fruit downstairs. You don't have to, like, you don't go to Whole Foods, you don't go to Walmart, you don't go any of this. You actually go to the person, you go, hola Maria, you know, hello Jose, like, you know, you just do your thing. And so I started going to the farmer's market and I started meeting the farmers. And I started buying local meat from upstate, and I started driving there to see the cows and to see the chicken and to see the pigs and to see the lamb. And it was like another thing. And people were like, you're crazy. You're going to see the animal, you're going to eat. And I was like, maybe I'm not going to see the one exactly, but why not? I'm going to see the family. Yes, of course. So it was like a pilgrimage to go there. Like, I would go to the farmer's market, but in the weekends, we would drive 2 hours. And I started to find out different kinds of meats and going only buying from a specific butcher in Brooklyn next to my house. Happened to be the people who actually started doing this farm-to-table thing. They actually started selling whole cows. And so I would go there every... Actually, that's the only place I said goodbye when I left, and I cried. We were all hugging because I used to go there every day. And again, another joke, you know, New York, a lot of people work like they're actors or they're artists and they have different jobs that, you know, they're waiters or bartenders. So I thought that the people who were at the butchery were actors or something like that. So I used to
interesting.
Say that. No, I mean, it's like, I don't know. So I will go over there and say, hey, Matt, how are you? And one day he's just doing small talk. So what else do you do? And he was, what do you mean? I'm like, well, are you an actor, an artist? And he says, I'm a butcher. And I said, I know you're a butcher, but you know. So he says, Monica, I went to school to become a butcher. I said, there is school? He goes, yes. And everybody in the butcher is like, I went to the school. And I was like, and they were giving lessons of how to cut animals. So guess who was in every month in the lesson? I was there. I was the only one who is not going to become a butcher, but I was just there. Because they will teach you how to cut the animal, like what parts. I know a lot about all the parts of the cow, so I know what to buy. You don't have to spend a fortune. You don't. You just have to know what you're eating. And so
that's a good tip right there. Yeah. Actually, yeah. So like, well, first of all, get to know your butcher. Get to know your rancher. First of all, it's cheaper, yes. And you help support the, you know, basically the production of more meat. If you're a carnivore, that's what you want. You want prices to come down. You want more people to have more cows and more meat out there in the market. But also learning how to cut your own meat, like Monica says, like you can buy big chunks of meat, and it's usually going to be much more cheaper than buying them already cut up. So that's a very good skill to learn if one has the opportunity.
Yeah, and you can do your chip as well. Like I love carnivore chips. Like if you have to take a short trip or like. 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had to go to New York for the day, and I don't want to buy the thing that they sell because they usually put a lot of pepper. I don't like a lot of pepper. and it's too spicy. I just want to have the meat. So I got a little, like on Amazon, like a little slicer. It's not very expensive. And it's on one side of my counter. Now I don't have any other. I used to have like the juicer and the thing, nothing. Everything is gone. I mean, two pots, that's it. And I have the slicer. So the meat that comes here, I'm no longer in New York, so I'm not driving to the farm, but I get the stuff delivered. I know the name of my rancher. I speak to him, and we talk every 2 weeks, something like that. I always say thank you, like you're feeding me, like really. Every time there's a new cow that is born, like a little, he sends pictures, and I'm like, yeah, I need that. Like right now, I think I texted him the other day because the meat that I got tastes a little bit different. I said, interesting, the new batch just tastes differently, right? And because I can tell the difference. It's almost like wine, like, you know, like, what is this batch, you know? So I got this machine, so I slice when it's still hard, like it's frozen. I slice it, and then I put it overnight in the oven. So it dehydrates, and then I salt it and I take it. So there are ways to make a budget with it. I know exactly how much money I can spend a month with being a carnivore. I don't go to supermarkets. I don't buy anything else, just the Edmond salt, electrolytes, good filters for the water and the meat and beef tallow.
Awesome. So like you have been carnivore, like you mentioned, most of your life, basically. And you heard people talking about it, and then you start experimenting, and I'm guessing it just became something natural for you to do?
Yes. I started like eating. So I was afraid of not being able to do it fully because I said, oh, I don't want to bring anything. But I noticed last year that I was eating more meat and much less, like I nailed it down to only lettuce. Like I would not have any other thing, just lettuce. And I started seeing, because I like the crunchiness, and I was like, no, lettuce, at least I'm having just one vegetable, you know. And I started to see a difference, but still I would get bloated because, you know, the lettuce, you go like that. And I was like, oh, I hate this. And I said, I wonder what will happen if I just do it all the way. Like, I'm going to give myself a few weeks. And obviously the moment I started, it just, there's no way back.
So apart from the bloating, did you notice improvements in other aspects of health in your life?
Yes. Okay, so I always been very, very healthy, but one thing that never was okay with me were my teeth and my gums. Like since I was little, it was always dentist or the ortho, like the periodontist. I don't know how to say it in English. Oh, the guy that is doing the woman that is doing the gums. And I did have very early on like a surgery, and I was always being taken care of it. So the flossing and all that and brushing and keeping my mouth alkaline. And so it was a hustle. But I needed to do it because he kept on saying, you're going to have your teeth fallen. You're going to look like an old lady with no teeth. And I was like, oh, I don't. So I had that. So since I became completely carnivore, obviously the pH of my mouth is completely, completely different. And I've been doing some research about how actually effective it is to have the saliva be around it and heal itself with no sugar in it. Because the problem is like, even if I had like, I don't know, like a potato or a pizza, whatever, and then I have another interval of 3 hours, I brush my teeth, whatever, I don't have enough time for the saliva to actually take care of everything inside. Like the human saliva is so, it's there for a reason, and one of the reasons is to self-repair whatever is happening, whether it's a cavity or something like that. So the first thing that I noticed within weeks was that I was not bleeding. My gums were not bleeding because I used to have like, you know, to floss a lot, still have to floss, but it's very, very different. And I don't use any like fluoride or anything like that. So I did go to my dentist. She said to me, because the last few years I was taking a lot of electrolytes with sugar. And she had said to me, I have never seen you with so many cavities. And I was like, okay. So I was like really trying, like I would, whatever. And I would brush my teeth. So this time I went and she's like, what the hell? And I was like, are you going to ask me what I'm doing? And she was, of course. So I told her, she was like, so we were talking about saliva and all that. So this was like a huge improvement. It's and then I looked online, and that's one of like the
Yeah, actually, yeah. Well, saliva production is important for good oral hygiene, oral health. Weston Price, I'm sure you've heard him. Yeah, he went around the world seeing people with the best teeth are basically those who are eating mainly meat. And I'm curious though, you mentioned that when you were a child, you're having a lot of problems with your gums, but you were eating mainly meat as well as a child. Were you having like sugar as well? Like also like the fruits you were mentioning?
The fruits. My mom yeah, that was the fruits. And the fruits like papaya, and I don't like banana. Like I will have papaya will be like, we have something called granadilla. Like there's certain tropical fruits in Colombia that are like growing up is like there. So the juices and the fruits were part of the daily diet.
Okay, that explains the sugar. Yeah, basically people who go on a carnivore diet, their oral problems basically get resolved. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
Yeah,
and actually, I don't know, you have siblings, you mentioned. I don't know how their diet is. Is it different from yours? And if it is, how is your health compared to that of your family in general?
Oh my God. It's like I'm an alien in my family because all of them are more like willing to go to the doctor for whatever. They all have insurance. They're all like, oh, I have a little thing here. And then where are you going tomorrow? To the hospital. What? Oh, I already paid for the insurance. So they have, including my mom, they were always like, I don't know, like slaves of the system because they trust the doctor blindly. I wasn't. I was always the weird one that I said to my mom when I was around 7 years old, I want you to take me to the needleman. And she looked at me and she goes, el pediatra, like you want to have another. And I said, not that shot. I don't want shots. I want the needles. So it took her a little bit to, like, I think it was becoming known already that there were some people doing acupuncture. So she brought me the needleman. And it was a doctor that had been in China that was doing acupuncture. And when I saw him, it was like, oh, my God, where have you been? My mom almost killed me taking me to the real doctor. So I started doing acupuncture as a preventive. And so I learned a lot from that, and I asked a lot of questions. So I was asking questions, and I was like, this makes all the sense in the world. So I stayed with that. And even throughout all the places that I lived and people saying, do you have health insurance? I was like, no. I said, what are you going to do when that happens? And so my joke is always, don't worry, I'll call you. If I get ill, I'll call you because you seem to be more concerned than me. I'm not concerned about not being healthy. So, and even though I broke bones, that's another thing. I broke a lot of my bones when I was little.
How so?
I broke bones, and my mom, that was the thing. She was telling us that we need to drink a lot of milk, calcium, but she never gave us magnesium because, you know, at that time you don't think about minerals. Or sink with chrome.
Vitamin K2, you need that as well. But were you having like accidents or like?
Yeah, no, terrible. I was always on that tree, like trying to get into the house and then falling two flights up and then.
It wasn't something what we call pathological fractures, where like you do something little and then suddenly you just break a bone. No, it was like.
I was a monkey.
Got it.
But I was arriving, they would call, like, I think the favorite doctor that I had was the orthopedist.
Not the big
guy. He happened to be part of the family, so he would go like, not again. And so I did have surgeries a couple of times because I broke the bones. And he was like, what were you doing? And I was like, I was being stupid. So because I was just, and so I remember that the last bone that I broke, I was probably 9 or 10. And I said to my mom, you know what, mom, I actually don't like milk. I'm very... very difficult with flavors. I don't eat what I don't like. I immediately get like, oh, like it's for real. I don't. So I said, I don't really like milk. And I don't think that I needed to grow anyway. I'm petite. I will never grow tall. So can we skip it? And then the doctor said, maybe we should not give her that much milk after the bone. And I said, thank you. Because I was probably not registering that. Too much calcium. So, and no magnesium, because they don't give you any magnesium whatsoever. Like, people don't know how important. For me, it's one of the most important things.
Yeah, a lot of people are deficient in magnesium, actually, especially because of the depletion of our soils. So, like, even the plants we eat, you know, have reduced amounts of magnesium. And then even the meat we eat, since, like, our cows are grazing out there, a lot of that land is desert. There's a lot of desertification, and we're losing a lot of nutrients in the soil. So even the plants our cows consume have low amounts of magnesium, therefore they concentrate less magnesium. So actually one of the supplements I do recommend, at least initially for my patients, because even if you're carnivore, there's a chance you could, depending where you are geographically, there's a chance you could be, you could have a lack of magnesium.
I do supplement myself for the last 30 years.
It's okay.
I have the three, and right now I'm trying to, and this is what I want to balance in the future. So I supplement myself with magnesium and zinc, although there's a lot of zinc in the meat, but I just never get sick. And then the third one is vitamin B and also vitamin B12. That's it. And the rest is like, okay, like totally okay. Although last year my mom died from a stroke. And so the whole family went crazy. It's like, because I never do the and yeah, when I was in the hospital, they were measuring. Obviously, I was stressed out because my mom was like lying there in bed. And so they found me that my brother was like, because my brother, it's like something happens, he goes to the hospital. So he was suffering just seeing me with, I was like, I don't. So he bought me one thing. He bought me the thing and he says, can you please, please just measure it? And so during the time that my mother passed and everything, I think for the first 3 weeks, I was having very high. And I said, and he would say, send me a picture. And I was like, I'm not gonna die. He was so scared that I would die. And I said, I drink a lot of water. Like, I don't need that potassium. So I said, all right, I'll get some natural potassium. So I did have it for a bit. I keep the machine there. I measure it from time to time and I don't have any problems. But I do have a lot of blood, like high blood in my
family. High blood pressure. Like, you had high blood pressure or you didn't? No, you didn't. Okay.
Nothing.
Your family does.
I didn't, but everybody had a stroke.
Yeah, everyone. Okay. That's family. Yeah. Okay. It's in the family. It's very common.
It's family. So my brother, he says, now that we're, because I'm 60. So he's like, I know you don't care about these things, but now you're in the parenthesis, the moment. And I was like, oh, okay. So I said, is this going to make you happy? Yes. And I said, I'll do it. And do you want me to send you a picture? So now he doesn't ask me, because I thought, why fight? He's going, I mean, he also just lost his mother. So he's in a state of stress and it was something very stressful. So yeah, potassium, but I don't like I don't, but supplementation I think is important if you have a deficit, but.
I agree. Yes. Yeah, so like supplements, depending on every individual. Yeah. You could begin with them, but once you're well adapted in the carnivore diet, I really don't recommend supplements. Perhaps maybe magnesium, maybe some vitamin D3 during, if you're like living at very high latitudes. Yeah, where it's like very, yeah, if you're in the sun, you don't have to worry about that.
No, I go every day.
Even though there's like discussions about vitamin D3, where there's not exactly the most important things, mainly like nitric oxide, which is what you also produce when you're in the sunlight. But well, that's for another day. So it's so basically you're a lot healthier than most, if not all of your family. And you've been eating mainly meat.
All of my family.
All your family.
And right now, before talking to you, I did, because I put a post on Facebook about carnivore. Today, I don't know. It was out because we were going to do this. So there was a funny picture of a man, like old man, say like a, you know, an ancient man going carnivore. And then another one of a normal man right now is called carby. And it's like, it's alluding of carbohydrates. So I put on Facebook in a couple of groups. And so there were some people from Colombia. Do you know any butchers in Colombia? And I said, no, I don't. Ask around. So, you know, some people on Facebook are like, they're waiting for things to happen. They don't know how to Google. So I said, I don't know. And I said, oh, give me a minute. And I went and I Googled. I don't know why I hadn't done this before. So I Googled in, like butchers or ranches in Colombia that are actually selling grass-fed. And I found a lot. So I just called my brother half an hour ago and I said, hey, here's the deal. I found you two places where you can get, and then after I finish this talk, I'm going to give you a hint of a couple of things so you can actually spend less money at the supermarket. And he's getting into, he's actually listening to me. He already got Orangeville, like he got educated on Bitcoin and everything. So I think that he's starting to see that I am 1 year younger. I look 20 years younger than him, although I'm only 1 year younger, and he's starting to pay attention. So there's a good influence.
Yeah, nothing better than like proving it yourself. Like people can see the results right there, especially with time, I believe. So like briefly, like now that you mentioned the orange pulling part, so we know you're a Bitcoiner. So briefly explain to us like how your Bitcoin journey began. And more importantly, like do you see a relation between people on following a carnivore diet and Bitcoiners? Are those two things that seem to go together?
Yeah, I'm going to start with the second question and then I'll go back to the orange bean. So I think that one of the things that I have learned the most with the Bitcoin and also Austrian economics is the whole concept of low time preference. And for me, low time preference, something that I've been really working on other ways, more from the psychological perspective, because I'm a person that's been doing a lot of shadow work and work with different therapies to work on my trauma. So basically, it all accounts to one word, to become accountable, so I can actually be free as a human being, emotionally free with the trauma, psychologically free, financially free, physically free. And then in many ways, what does it really mean? So when I got the Bitcoin Standard and I actually studied with a woman that I paid money, I really believe in education and I wanted somebody that I can ask questions. So it's this English woman, she was doing running a course on Bitcoin for 16 weeks. I was, 2021. Because I had heard about Bitcoin, but I never paid attention. People were saying to me in 2013-14, buy this stuff. But I was at the time trying to figure out how to get out of my marriage. So I had more important things to do at the time. I don't regret not having listened to it because I was not ready. I was not ready to listen because you don't just buy. I mean, people did and then
sold.
They came back. But yeah, I sold it. And then around 2017, I had this assistants that they were talking to me about it. They would say, come on, give me some money, let's do it. And I was like, I had just gone through my divorce. I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. Should I stay in New York? And I was like, again, I don't have the attention. So 2020 came. I started, I read an article by Breedlove in Medium. I used to write in Medium. And he was talking about time. So I got into Bitcoin because all my work has a lot to do with the idea of time and space and memory. So it was the idea about time and zero and all that I saw that he was referring to Bitcoin as time. I was like, oh, this is very interesting. And so from there, I took the classes with this English woman. She kind of briefly mentioned Seyfedean's book. And so I bought the book and I went through it very fast. I was like, oh, this makes sense. And this is some other things I don't agree, like the modern art part. That's another thing. He knows this already. So we have a discrepancy in that department. But anyway, so I the moment I understood the low time preference, it was like all the Christmas tree got lit. Everything. Everything that I've done in my life, all the things why I call myself polymathy, I said, this is the synthesis. Bitcoin is the synthesis. Bitcoin is the way I'm going to integrate every single thing that I've studied because it's the thing that makes me make sense to me. It's like a state of mind. It's like a state of consciousness that is giving me the possibility to put everything together. And what it got together was the idea that if I am accountable and responsible for my deeds and how I relate to them, I can make good or bad choices. And those choices are going to affect the time that I have to live in this world, which is what I'm supposed to value the most. And so I've been down the rabbit hole of what is value for many years. I'm actually finishing a book that I wrote that is called The Nature of My Reality, Everything I Need is in My Body. And it's little stories of how I got here. There's going to be a part about Bitcoin. More than Bitcoin, it's about understanding money and how important it is to understand how we relate to the idea of value. As an artist, the idea of value is something quite interesting because a lot of artists struggle with the idea of like putting a value in themselves because they're afraid of not being validated. So you do something very automatic that is like you trade your validation for acceptance and you bypass the value and you allow a middleman to tell you how much your value is. So you get a gallery, so you get somebody else, and then you get screwed because you're not putting your own price. You don't understand about open markets. You just are so afraid of not being called the next time. So I understood that when I was living in New York, and that was the part that I hated the most of how am I going to be able to still, you know, trade what I do with that. And so the first thing that this is before I did Bitcoin, I was already leaving the market, that market. I started marketing myself as a public art artist. And so dealing differently with the people who are offering me jobs and me delivering. So that's a way of like voluntarily collaboration where you actually get very well paid and I don't have to own or give anything that I don't need to a third person that doesn't deserve. So, especially because a lot of these people are taking advantage. But I think that the artists themselves and people in general are ignorant. And ignorance is not a pejorative word. Ignorance means I don't know. So people don't want to study or educate themselves in the possibility of learning a new skill, such as understanding money, because, you know, money is a technology. And if you go to the Greek origin of the word technos, it's skill. So money can be a skill that you practice, understanding what it works for, how it works, how you value it. So this whole axiom of, like, you know, your time is the most valuable thing that you have, and value is subjective, was what got me. I was like, oh my God, this is it. So when it came to, like, becoming a full carnivore, obviously I started with studying economics, and Bitcoin made me really become more aware of my expenses and making budgets differently. I already have to do budgets because, like, I'm giving a lot of money from governments and I have to actually manage it for fabricators and stuff like that. But that didn't mean that I was managing my own personal finances as good. And so it gave me the possibility to actually make sense of how I was making decisions and if those decisions were good economical decisions for the future, like saving. Like, I never saved. I was always getting a lot of money and just like, oh, you know, everything is fine. And so with becoming a carnivore, it's like a metaphor of the same thing. It's like, okay, here's my body. My body's going to have X amount of years that I don't know how many I'm going to have. I'm going to take care of it now so I can have a longer life. Same with saving, with, like, doing DCA with Bitcoin. And so I also, whatever I'm going to put into my body is like Bitcoin, like, has to be something hard and it has value and it's scarce. So I see, like, if the quality of the meat is really good, my body is going to be transformed. That energy is going to be transforming. So I'm actually taking care of my long-term Monica, like 70, 80, 90 years old, by just becoming aware of what is it that I'm putting. And so it's the same thing with DCAing. I think this is a very close metaphor.
Yeah.
With a
it
lot
is.
Of stuff.
Yeah. So, like, do you see carnivore as a logical conclusion for many Bitcoiners to arrive to then, like, health-wise, that is? Or I ask that because what's your opinion on those who are Bitcoiners yet follow perhaps a vegan diet or worse still, like, a standard American diet?
I think that, to be fair, I don't like to give opinions, but I like to talk from experience. So if somebody asks me, like, what do you think about that, I will say, okay, in my case, it works marvelous. Like, I'm not going to become attacking people otherwise. But I don't want to hang out. Like, 2 days ago, I went to a party of Bitcoiners on the beach, and they just brought the food. And I had, before going to the beach, it was somebody's birthday, I had my steak. And so I was full. I'm just going to take water. And they start snacking. And I'm not in front of many people that snack anymore. I don't. So I started observing the relationship to the snack and what they're taking out of the bags. And I'm not judging, but I'm like, and so they keep on saying, do you want? And I said, thank you, I'm a carnivore. And they were like, yeah, but these are organic. And I said, okay, 100% carnivore. What? You don't eat anything? And I said, no. So I know that I'm in that place where I'm like, they're uncomfortable, I'm uncomfortable. I don't like to judge people. Now, if there's always one person that wants to know more. So this person says, how do you keep the discipline? So we start talking about discipline. And I said, look, the first time that I went completely like that, 3 days, 4 days, I still had a little bit of a craving of, but it was more mental. It was like, what if this doesn't work or something like that? But then now it's no brainer. I'm not questioning, should I be a carnivore tomorrow? It's like, I am. That doesn't mean, and I have to say, because this is my life, that if one day I want to have a pizza, I'm going to have it. Do I want to have a pizza right now because I'm craving one? There's no more cravings. There's no more craving. Even if I see the most amazing food or I go or the smell, it just doesn't connect. So I don't judge. I'm very open to show myself, very open, so they can ask me questions and I can give them information. Because if I started to judge, I'm not going to be the same with money and Bitcoin. Like, if I come from like a place of being open for them to ask me, and I can deliver the information the most objectively that I can with my experience, I'm not going to say study says that this, and they say, I don't believe you, you got to prove, and I go do your own research. Like, I'm nobody. I'm actually a little Colombian woman that is crazy. You know, like don't follow me. I have no idea. I have no numbers. I've done no things. I just can speak, and maybe what I'm saying is pure BS. Like, you don't have to trust me. But I noticed that when I have this attitude, like the other day at the beach, after three times people offering me stuff, one person start asking questions, the other one say, and then for instance, they are asking questions, isn't that very expensive? And I said, it's relative. Because do you know how much money do you actually spend monthly, including all the stupid stuff that you buy when
Starbucks.
You are in the middle of the street? Yeah, when you're in the middle of the street and you cannot have lunch, and then you go, okay, 2 minutes, I'm going to have whatever. Start adding that up, not only the calories or whatever, just the money. And with the inflation and that, see how much she said that. And so I said that I have a set up like a budget, and I have not gone, and I have the meat always, and it's just I'm never hungry. And I started adding something else lately. I do my bone broth, which I think is delicious. I've always been doing it, and so I eat very well. The amount of meat that I need to eat for my body weight and everything, I don't starve. But there are moments that I just don't want to eat meat at 8 o'clock at night. I don't, and so I go like broth, and I just sip it like that, or in the morning sometimes I want to jump start with a broth. And so I know that those minerals are everything.
Yeah, very healthy actually. And that's a cool thing about a carnivore. You only eat when you're hungry, and you eat until you're full. It's that simple. And I do agree that a carnivore shouldn't be religious about these type of things. Like, that's when you're very dogmatic about it, you push people away. So like, when maybe I should rephrase the question a bit better, but no, like, if you're a Bitcoiner and vegan, or a Bitcoiner and still following a standard American diet, you're free to do whatever you want. You know, that's what Bitcoin is. It's freedom. You're free to do whatever you want. The protocol, if people want to adopt it, fantastic. I was starting to phrase my question more on the line, like, for me, it makes sense. Like, once you adopt Bitcoin, you think longer term. You don't trust. You verify. Now, I think that's what a lot of carnivores do. Like, a lot of people who come to the carnivore diet have tried everything the traditional institutions and guidelines have already recommended, and they fail. Like, they're not getting any better. So then most of them enter the carnivore diet out of desperation. So it's once they do that, and once they start seeing the changes in their health, that when they're verifying it, that's when they become, well, basically carnivores. They become convinced of it. So I think it's important to verify, because nutritional science is such a weak science, a soft science. You cannot guide your health, your food choices through those type of studies. Could be they're observational studies. A lot of people don't know this. There's a lot of statistical manipulation. Yeah. So again, all I'm trying to say verify.
Within the whole thing, it's like when I started, I wanted to, maybe I can have bacon and I'll not have some butter, whatever. So I realized, like, there were a couple of weeks where I said, I'm going to try all these things, because there's a whole list of things. And then bottom line was, like, it was too much, too much fat was not working for me. It wasn't. So I had to find, like, the right ratio between fat and the protein that I was having per day, where I feel like I don't feel full, I don't feel, like, I don't feel gassy. Like, there's stuff that your body has to go back. So I went back to, I like to do things like minimal. I went back to the minimal and said, you know what, I want to stay with the, because I had that like lamb, and then we do bacon, and one day some eggs, and then I do the butter, the tallow. And I didn't know what was it that it was not in the equation. So I went, everything, let's go back to basics. There was one day that it was my birthday, so we went with another Bitcoin, he's also a carnivore. We went to this asado, like Argentinian asado. It was like a party, and I said, okay, we go there, and I went over there, and they were serving like morcillas and, you know, like blood sausage and stuff like that. And I did have the steak and stuff, but it was too condimented for me. And then, I don't know, I just said, okay, let me have a little bit of the morcilla. And I did ask, like, because in Spain, you can have blood sausage without any, like, carbs in it. And they promised to me that they didn't have, but I noticed in my body that it did have whatever they put. And I was like, I called them the next day and I said, he goes, oh yeah, we forgot to tell you. I was like, don't do that. When they ask you, like they say, I mean, I said, I'm a carnivore, and just the fact that you are Argentinian butcher, whatever, and you say, yes, 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 but then you say, oh, oops, I forgot. Just don't do that, because it's not, I mean, I was upset with them. Nothing really bad happened, but I immediately, my body went like, ugh, like, because I can taste, and I said no. So I went back to basics. I was like, I'm not going to try anything. It works. I do change a little bit the kind of steaks that I want, whether it's skirt or hanger. I love hanger steak. I love picanha, which is the culotte. Obviously, who doesn't love a ribeye? Like there's or the ribs. Like, I mean, I love all, the good thing is, like, I love meat all together. So I don't. But then I also make a list of what is my budget and how I'm going to designate. And I also have organ meat. I love liver. But not every day, because it can be like, so I eat at least once a week. I have a whole liver in little pieces, and I make it. This was big. I used to have liver since I was little with cilantro and chives. So I don't do that anymore. Although they're herbs, I could. I just go like, no, let's do it like this. So I'm learning to eat it just by itself. And it's good. I know how to cook it.
Okay. So. Yeah. And you get tired of the taste. Yes. Because the liver is like really dense in a lot of vitamins and minerals. So like you can actually suffer from hypervitaminosis if you have too much, even copper poisoning. So your body's right there telling you like liver's good, but perhaps not too often.
No. It's all like, right. Yeah. And because I buy from this rancher, and when I buy bundles, it's cheaper. And I don't know why. It was my mistake or his mistake. He just sent me like many bundles. And when I open, it's like, I don't want that liver, because I will have one a week, not five a week. So I still have from that batch that I bought, I still have. And I said, I don't want liver for now. I need space in
the rest. Yeah. And going back to Colombia, like how have you been there recently? Like have you seen Colombia being changed due to, well, it's what they eat. I mean, have you seen the influence of fiat on people's way of eating? Like, do people eat a lot of processed, ultra-processed food there, or is it still more traditional with a lot of meat and fruits?
The thing is it's like there are two different kinds of people that, like, my friends, they all have farms, whether they're close to the city and everything. So they started growing their own vegetables, which was great. Like, people started to be more conscious about food. So, like, my best friend has a beautiful farm up the mountain, and they produce, and they have their own milk, their own cheese, their own lettuce, their own kale, their own whatever. They produce everything, and actually they started doing it for them and for a small community, and they sell, not too big, but just to friends, so it can be kept. So they're doing that. So I noticed that there were people becoming more, because it was a trend also all over the world to be more foodie-like, so there was this trend that came to Colombia. So like the cuts of the meat started to be more different, because there was more meat that was imported, which I don't think is a good idea, because Colombia has very good meat, but they were importing Argentinian meat, you know, like, but then the cuts were different. When we were growing up, like what we called skirt steak in Colombia is called sobre barriga, and you don't do it like the entraña, like the Argentinians, you actually cook it. It's a different, and I think in Mexico you do it for tacos or something like that. So it's interesting to see what people do with different cut, and that's something that I adore, because it's the same piece and there's so many variations. Obviously, I like my meat like simple. I don't like too much crazy marination and stuff like that. So yeah, I noticed that people. I still, when I go to Colombia, we have asados. We have like the weekend where we have a barbecue, and I'm still always the one that goes like, what time are we eating? I'm hungry. I want meat. And I just eat meat. And so I told my friends, and they're all very healthy. I have a bunch of friends that they're at my age, 60. They're all going up the mountain with bikes and running marathons, and they do drink they do drink their beers and stuff like that, but they're just, and they're all very healthy. I don't know, they like to keep themselves healthy. But I told them, I was, and then they were like, do you always have to be that severe? And I was like, yeah, that's me. So even for them, that was severe.
So there's like this movement for being self-sufficient in Colombia. Is it's still happening right now, or is it something that happened in the past?
In the past, I mean, unfortunately, we have like a socialist government that I hate, and people started waking up that they made the wrong choice. But people are just like so sold in socialism / wokeism, communism, and
Latin America has been plagued by this for a long time. Nonetheless, there's been signs of it trying to go in the other direction. You know, with El Salvador, Argentina, and maybe in the future with Suriname. With Mayra Parboy. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her last name correctly. But what are your general thoughts in Latin America, actually? You've kind of followed the politics around, I believe.
Yes.
It's like, what's your general direction? Is it uptrend in Latin America, downtrend, or is it kind of like same as always?
I think that it takes, okay, so this is what I feel. And I feel it also here, like wherever in the world, is like, there is sometimes in life that people that are very based, like people who are very much in connection to themselves, come and they decide to run for government. Such is the case as Nayib Bukele or Javier Milei. They're one of a kind. They're people, for me, I listen to Milei every day. I listen to Bukele whenever he's speaking. I read what they write. I am very much aware of what they're talking about because I'm very interested. I align a lot with what they say, like 80%, 90% of the times. I mean, not 100% because it would be, I don't listen to all. So this is what I feel is like, there is a possibility for human beings to become more free, but they need courage to do it. And not everybody has that courage. It is not that easy to be out there and say, I'm going to do this. I feel I have that courage, and I've made many decisions in my life, so I don't have to think, oh, I have children, or I can't leave. So my life, I've made it the choices, so I can actually just pick up my bag and leave. But that's me. I know a lot of people can't because of family things, and I get it. Like, you know, people have to think about others. So, for instance, when I listen to Milei, which is pretty much every day, I always listen first to The Economist, to the person who's an, oh, he's a really, like, if you really want to see Austrian economics, like, live happening, that's what he's doing. It's live. It's like, it's we can see it and try it. So, and it's beautiful that I studied this year because now I understand when he's talking. Like, I understand exactly what he's saying. Or even the whole thing with Bukele today with, like, he's saying that he's not going to control the prices, but he's not going to allow the monopolies of the people who are trying to tweak with corruption. And so I was able to go to Twitter today and argument because I know that, because I have been studying. And it has given me the possibility to actually go back to the books and try to find out, oh, this makes sense. So since I've been studying money, I've been more interested in politics, because I think that politics are just like the public servants are there for the people. They're not supposed to be in government just, you know, pillaging the people and doing whatever they want. They're there to serve the people. But people have given, in general, all the authority to people who don't know how to govern. And again, I like to go to etymology. The word to government comes from Greek and is the skipper of the boat. So you have a boat that is the country, and you need somebody to drive the boat. He's not the boat. Somebody has given him or her the possibility to take the boat somewhere, to steer it. And people who are in government, they forget that they're working for the people and they're representing the people. So I think that it's time right now to actually get educated on what that is. Like, as a civilian, as a citizen, it is your duty to know why you're a citizen and you're not running for government. And it is your duty to understand why things don't work. You cannot blame it on your neighbor. You cannot blame it on your spouse. You cannot blame it on your children. You cannot blame it on your boss. You cannot blame it on anybody. You can just do proof of work. And if you don't know, you ask. So education is very important. I'm very big on education. So I feel like I'm more and more into politics. This is something else that happened not long ago. When I was in high school, a very good friend of mine, we're very good friends, and we love to party a lot. We ended up going to Europe, and he was studying in Europe. He ended up working for the Colombian government, but he was representing Colombia in different, the food bank, all that. He lived many years in Africa, many years in Rome. I think it was the FAO, Federation of, I don't know, those like agencies that represent Colombia. Now, he returned to Colombia like 10 years ago, and he's been a really radical voice talking about globalization, and he's totally aligned with my views right now. The only thing is he's not a Bitcoiner, but I said, you don't know it yet. So we encounter ourselves via Twitter, and he did a course that I'm actually doing that is called Geopolitics and Globalization. So it's basically the same thing without talking about Bitcoin. And so we've been talking back and forth about, like I said, hey, you know, I have all this. This is the joke. It's like everybody was like, oh, he's an expert because he lived around. He has the experience of having represented governments and looking and working for these agencies. And here I am, the artist, the one that is like, yeah, colorful, whatever. And now it's like I'm having deep conversations. And he said to me the other day, I never imagined in my life that I was having these conversations with you for more people. And I said, right? Because we used to be friends, but we used to be like party friends. And I said, yes. And so I feel very good because I feel that I'm learning a lot from him. But the most is like I have a lot to let him know that he still has not opened up his mind. And so we're getting there because he started asking me about CBDCs. And I said, yeah, we can talk about that, but I wouldn't worry so much about CBDCs. But I will worry more about the Federal Reserve. So he says, oh, so I sent him material. And so it's good. It's a good start. So I feel like there's some people who are actually becoming aware from different perspectives. And it's up to each one of us to inspire others to do the same. We cannot force people. But so education is important for me. I'm going to do a project that is related to Austrian economics. I actually just finished a piece in New York for the subway station, the Grand Central Station. It's an animation, and I use praxeology as inspiration.
Yeah, we'll definitely share the links in the show notes so people can look at that. But it's actually, it's very, very interesting. It's like most Bitcoiners, at least the early ones, I would say, have always tended to lean more toward libertarianism, anarcho-capitalism, crypto-anarchists, and stuff like that. Basically, less government, not more. Or so, you mentioned that you would work for government, right? Like for government projects. Has learning about Bitcoin? Oh, sorry.
I see. I get hired by them.
Hired by them. Has learning about Austrian economics, obviously, which basically push for less government interference in the definitely at least in the economic sector. But if you read Rothbard, for example, that guy's he's an anarcho-capitalist. How has learning all these new things influenced your view on working for the government? Has it changed anything? Is it like nothing has changed?
Well, I'm going to be very honest. As long as there's fiat and I can get a job, that's where all my sats are coming from. And I'm not doing anything that is fiat. I mean, basically, they're going to give this job to somebody else. And it's about beautifying and bringing awareness with my work. So if the awareness that I can bring is related to economics, well, why not? Which is what I'm doing right now. So I'm going to use that. I think that it has given me the possibility to really understand to what extent, for instance, this government in the United States since Roosevelt has become extremely socialist. And so a lot of the programs, including that, they're socialist programs with the idea under an umbrella that we are capitalist. So I understand the differences. Of course, I'm very much against a lot of statism, like governance. But I do understand, and this is one thing that I was thinking today when I was tweeting and stuff like that. It was like, okay, some people like Milei and Bukele chose to be leading both. They have policies or they have strategies that because they have an ideal, and both of them in different ways, they're actually applying those ideals for the good of their people. And in the case of Milei, he wants his people or the people of Argentina to be free by opening all the markets. Now that he's friends with Israel and doing that, there's like personal stuff that I don't like, but what I'm seeing is the result of what's happening with the government. So what he did is he cut all the nonsense, including the ministry of the woman. When I say this as a woman, all my friends go like, but are you against women? I said, no, I'm against stupidity. That's what I mean. Because those ministries, they didn't do much. And just labeling yourself as a shoe or as a giraffe or as a whatever, it's not going to change the world. And you're actually spending a lot of money that could go for other kinds of education, that it could be more about teaching people how to learn about economics, for instance. That will be more like practical, right? So I'm really interested in the programs and how you can actually, you can sit down and say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. I'm very good at criticizing, but I'm more like a constructive criticism. Like, okay, if I don't see this works, what can I bring in order to rebuild this? Do I have a solution? Because other than that, I'm not doing much if I just sit down and give an opinion. I hate people sit down and just, it's horrible. I say, okay, so what do you, I don't know, but it's horrible. It's like, I don't need your opinion. Like, it's like either we start working. And in the case of Bukele, I see that he started with violence. And again, as I said, studying Austrian economics is just like very important to understand that if there is violence, there are never going to be open markets. There's never going to be collaboration. This is the first thing that you have to address. In a civilization is how you're going to deal with violence. And if at this moment the violence coming from people who are manipulating the market, you say no. And so all the Bitcoiners are screaming today because they say, we knew that Bukele was going to be a blah, blah, blah. He said that he was a dictator. And I go, oh, rubbish. And I did right. Here's the thing. It's very easy to give an opinion, but how many of you have lived, were born, and grew up with violence? None of you. Plus, you're all millennials. What do you know about the 90s violence? You were barely born that year. But I grew up in a lot of violence. So I know what it is when there's a choice of nonviolence. Guess where I go? I go where there is no violence. Because you cannot get used to violence. You shouldn't get used to violence. It should not be the proper way to evolve. And because, you know, with violence, you don't prosper. There's no productivity. There's nothing. Only death. So I think that it's important that not to take things apart. I'm not pro a lot of intervention against, but I'm really for like understanding there are certain people that are elected that are visionaries, people who actually know what they're doing. And hopefully that woman in Suriname also. Now, that what they're going to do is all 100% perfect? No, they're still human. And they still have to go through Congress if they have one, or through people rioting because they don't like that. You know, everybody has an opinion. So I think it's important to understand the difference because if you ask me, what would you do? And I said, first of all, I will never be the president of a country. So I'm going to let them govern, you know, like, but I can be cheering and saying, this is good. And again, I've been listening to a lot of his or their speeches, and I have learned so much about on the go, what does it mean to be living in an open market society? Because that's the only way we're going to know if they're successful. One, because he has Bitcoin as a legal tender, and the other one, because he's actually implementing all the ideas from Mises and Rothbard, like to the day. So I'm very open to that. So I read the things that I read a lot is just, I'm going through all the books that Saifedean recommended in the course. So I'm Rothbard, Mises, Hoppe, even reading other ones like that are not so like Hayek, you know, like some people are more loved than others, or Friedman, but I just spend time just listening to them. And even contemporaries, because we have, like, for instance, in Chile, there's this guy called Axel Kaiser. He's very young as well. Like, he's a millennial. He's fantastic. He just finished writing a book. And so I follow a lot of these people because the more I listen, the more things make sense and the more I learn about how to deal in my day to day.
Actually, yeah, it's a very complete answer. And it's simply a lot more complicated. Like, I also agree with being with less government being better. But you can't just change things overnight dramatically. I do think you need to wind things down slowly, which I think Bitcoin will help to do. Like, the main problem here is the money printer. The money printer is what has brought us fiat food. It's why we think eating grains and fruits and vegetables is healthier. It's why our money is broken, basically. It's why inflation's happening. So there's a lot of broken things, but Bitcoin can hopefully help unwind this slowly instead of dramatically, because if fiat were to collapse from one day to the other, it's a lot of pain. And I would say same thing with governments. A lot of people are not ready to be completely independent. For example, a lot of people do depend on government welfare to survive. Now, I do think government welfare is a disaster. It destroys the economy long term. It only gets bigger and bigger. But probably it's not the most ideal thing to just cut it off completely one day. I may perhaps unwinding slowly is a much better alternative.
That's why education is very big. And I think, you know, I'm a little bit like this when people say Bitcoin fixes this. I don't think that things should be fixed, because that's my philosophy. It's like, I don't see myself as broken. What I see myself is not integrated. Like, there's certain parts of myself that I have not worked on that I need to integrate. So I do feel that there's a couple of gaps with Bitcoin space. One of them is like, it's very generalized. I'm not saying everybody, but there's a lack of connectivity with emotional intelligence or trauma work. And I think that you can have all the knowledge in Bitcoin and even health and be pumping a lot of iron and eating a lot of this. But if you don't take care of reconnecting what you really need and value emotionally, because you had X, Y, and Z happen in your house or in your country and you're a victim of the circumstances, you will never find what it takes. And so, because I come from that part where I actually integrated that first, I can see that lack. I met many Bitcoiners, I've been to many conferences, and I speak very openly about it. I've been working with some of them because I do mentorships about it. And it's incredible that I see that there's that hunger, that space there to be able to reintegrate parts of ourselves that we didn't know that they were lacking. So I follow a lot this doctor's called, maybe you know him, Gabor Mate. He's a Canadian doctor. He's 80 years old, and he specializes in trauma and addiction. So it's very important to integrate that. He has a movie, he has workshops. I've done a lot of work with him. He's fantastic. And he's somebody who didn't know what he was doing was so incredible and became very famous by it, but he doesn't even know what his approach is. I mean, people say, what is your technique? And he says, I just listen to people. So I think that the things that we don't do in societies to listen to our needs. How do I know what I need if I don't listen to my needs? So sometimes we become completely codependent and addicted to society's needs because we want to be accepted. We in relationships, in job situations, in different things. So it's very important that has some awareness in it, because I do see that, I'm not saying everybody, but I see a lack of that. And I think that if we're really rebuilding society, we're really rebuilding a civilization. If we don't come to this civilization in a more balanced way, we're still going to bring the same problems, but to Bitcoin.
So basically it's being okay as an individual first, like fixing yourself. And yes. Then that's how you can contribute to society.
Integrating.
And that's how, integrating yes. society.
That's my message.
Okay. Yeah, because you mentioned that Bitcoin doesn't fix anything. That's a very very popular saying, right? Bitcoin fixes this. You don't believe Bitcoin fixes everything?
No, I
or
said
not
Bitcoin
anything at all?
Is a synthesis. No. Because you see, when you use the word fixing, it means that something is wrong. So maybe there is broken money. Yes. So Bitcoin can fix the money, but it's not everything, because it says it fixes everything. No, it doesn't. I see a lot of people with a lot of Bitcoin and they have broken hearts because they didn't have a good childhood. I met so many Bitcoiners that they don't even know how to go about their lives. They don't have a relationship to their needs. They have trauma that they have to work with. So Bitcoin is not fixing that. there's no awareness in that. So I think that what I'm bringing to the, and I'm willing to do that with my work and being more public about it, is like, how to bring that awareness by being myself, and people say, ah, we can do that. So I do other stuff that is, I do astrological readings. I like to read time. And when I read time in general, it's like time is acoustic, because you're looking at like frequencies that are working like that. And so you see patterns. I have a way to see patterns in life. And then I look and corroborate things in history with what's going on in the stars. And you go, oh my God, we're repeating this. We're repeating, like right now, for instance, we're repeating the same, many, many events, like the revolutionary times, 1776. We have that thing happening. And we also very much going to repeat a pattern of 1865 with the Civil War. So you say, is that going to happen? He says, no, there's a tendency that if we're not seeing things as they are, we're going to not believe what's going on, and then we can just go down to the void. So I use a lot of things that are very psychological, or more like part of the the right side of the brain, that are more abstract, more intuitive, more instinctual. I work a lot with that. And so what happened was that praxeology, or the study of human action, brought me so much light in the logical part of my brain that I do have, but I never wanted to use as much. So I'm creating right now a beautiful piece. I've been working on it, and I'm going to collaborate with other people, that is going to probably support people getting into a rabbit hole where a lot of these things can have, like, they're going to be available. So we can actually start putting Bitcoin and Austrian economics, human action, at the same time and place for all those emotional needs that were not there for us because we lack them. Not because it's your parents are bad. No, it has nothing to do with that. We're just all victims of, like for instance, all this war in Israel and Palestine is giving so much generational trauma that it's impossible not to think what's going to happen in 10 years' time or even 30 years' time. They're carrying that trauma for the last century. So I'm interested in that, and I'm interested in actually supporting people, because I have the capacity to say, hey, like a mirror, like, hey, this is good, but look at this. And then use Bitcoin as a synthesis, like as the third way to see other things that you never thought. I never thought I would be doing this in my life. Bitcoin gave me the possibility to stand in a different place, to see things differently, like change perspective. It's amazing. I'm 60 and I am ready to live another 30 years of eating information and experiencing and giving it back to the people.
Well, Monica, we're running out of time. And I feel we can like go into more detail into a lot of different topics, especially the emotional part. I do think that's very important for a Bitcoiner to have. One last little comment around what Bitcoin fixes everything. The way I see it is that it doesn't fix everything. It's just a saying. But I do think it helps fix a lot of things, because money, there's also another saying, like, money is the half of every transaction, or half of everything. Like, again, going back to nutrition, like, that's, but money has corrupted our way of eating, for example. I bring it back to carnivore real quick. Our way of thinking, the universities, our way of thinking has been flooded with this woke stuff. That's because of fiat.
Propaganda.
Fiat makes that possible. So, like, I think that's what Bitcoiners kind of refer to when they say Bitcoin fixes everything. Obviously, it doesn't fix everything. This emotional part you mentioned, though, I would love to go more into that, and maybe perhaps in some other future episode. I think that's very important, especially if that's what you plan on specializing. And I think you could share a lot of valuable information regarding that. But before we end the episode, oh, first, one last question. Do you know what Noster is? And are you in Noster? Oh, perfect.
Yeah, I discovered Noster, or discovered me, like pretty much the same month that it was launched. So I do go there. I have a thing there. How are you calling that thing? Well, yeah.
The MPUB?
I do it. Oh. Yeah, MPUB. Yeah, but it's from the very beginning. And I post from time to time. I do look at stuff. I'm not that active, but lately what I've been doing is like doing research about how I can actually put more multimedia stuff, because it is something that you have to put together. It's not, because it's not just one app. It has different clients. So it requires that I study more. So I'm going down that rabbit hole to see how can I make the best use of how I want to communicate with it, other than being just like, you know, get another app where you scroll. I just don't want to have another app where I scroll. I want to be able to create the content and do it in a way that is smart. And so I got into, like, right now I know that there's this thing, I'm not good with names, but you can actually pay for a year and you can have like almost like a landing page with all your mm-hmm. your files, because I'm very visual. So I want to be able to upload the videos and my images and have like people know that that's what I'm doing. Even podcasts and stuff like that. So I know that's the future and I love it. And anything has to do with technology that is out there. I'm the first one. I bought my first Macintosh 1987.
Oh.
My mom's, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. This is the future. Like I always been first in the internet coding. Like I'm not afraid.
I'll share a podcast with you. It's a really good one with Derek Ross. The name of the podcast, the podcaster is Ben Werman. I'll share that podcast with you. I think you'll learn a lot about what Noster is and what you can do with it. I do know the artistic community in Noster is growing, and I'll try to get you in contact with some of them so they can teach you how to monetize. They're even selling their art through Noster and getting sats in return. So the market is growing.
Love it.
So yeah, I think you could take advantage of this hugely. And well, Monica, where can people find you if they're interested in knowing more about your work and everything you do?
Okay. So I'm in social media and my webpage is called Monica Bravo with a K, but it's going to land you into the name of my studio. It's called Studio of Endless Ideas because I have so many ideas. In Instagram, I mean, I can give you this and you put it underneath this. I have a same handle in Instagram, Monicaco, and I do Twitter. Like I like to be on Twitter Spaces, and obviously I don't know my handle of Noster, but I do have that, so I actually can give you something like my tree, what is it, like one of thing where all my links are, is the best way to do that. And I know where actually my Substack. I write every week. I'm really good at writing. I write very personal stuff, but also reflections on the stuff. So I'll give you a bunch of links. You choose whatever you want to put.
Perfect. Yeah. I'll add all that in the description below. And Monica, thank you very much for joining me, and have a great day.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. And all the best for this wonderful podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.